Good afternoon to everyone. Thank you for joining us for today's daily COVID-19 update. I want to recognize, of course, Dr. Nate Smith, Secretary of Health, but also he has two of his key team members here, Dr. Dillahay, who will be talking about contact tracing just a little bit. But I also want to recognize Dr. Baker. Dr. Baker, if you'd just stand up. Dr. Baker will be 90 years old Sunday. And I don't know of any state employee that's still working anywhere close to that age. And I'm just very proud of him. I went over there probably before COVID-19 ever started, and he gave me a tour of the lab. He's turning 90, and he's doing such an incredible job. So he continues to be director of the public health lab. And when we talk today about the success of the lab and his team, I just wanted to recognize Dr. Baker, age 90, this Sunday. Happy birthday, Dr. Baker. So yesterday we had 8,425 cases. And since then we've had an additional 226 COVID-19 cases in Arkansas. That brings us to 8,651. In terms of hospitalizations, we were at 137. We have plus 10 in hospitalizations. That brings us to 147 in hospitalizations. Deaths, we've had one additional deaths that bring us to 152 deaths here in the state. Yesterday, we had another strong day in terms of our testing in Arkansas with 3,846 COVID-19 tests that were performed across the state. And for today, that's a 3.1% positivity rate. And whenever we get to the testing chart, we can look at that more closely. I want to talk about it a little bit more. And that brings us to some of the graphs that I want to spend some time on. Our simple case report that you can see where we are. And you can see we've had 2 days of spike that have been rather high, but beyond that, we've reached a new level there, but it is more level at around today's mark of 226 cases. The next one shows the rolling average, and that hopefully, when you see that flatten out up there, that will continue. That would be a good sign for us. And then if you go into the hospitalized, I've already given you the numbers, but you can see the trend line there and that's going to have to go up some just simply because our cases have gone up. So there's not any surprise there, but it's something we watch and we hope that flattens out soon. And then we'll see the percent of positive tests, and I want to talk about that just for a second. That, as you can see on today's numbers, it is a 3.1% positivity rate. Well, tomorrow that will be rectified. It will be balanced with new numbers and accuracy that comes in. And so that might wind up a 4%. We're giving you the latest information today, as Dr. Smith said, but I asked Dr. Smith and he confirmed that all of the other numbers that you see have been already corrected. And so even though this one is reflecting our current data that might have to be adjusted tomorrow, everything else is adjusted in those numbers. And the point is that for the last 20 days, we have been below the 10%. Of course, you could almost go back about 40 days because we just had one that dipped into the 10% level. But that positivity rate, I'm still very pleased with here in Arkansas. And then I told you that today we wanted to take the 190 cases that we had on June 1, which was last Monday, and just now that we've had an opportunity to go through those and call the individuals that tested positive and get their contacts, and to see where we are on those cases and what information we can learn that would be helpful to share with the public. And so this slide, the next one, Well, maybe there's one more before then. So I apologize. We'll get to that. This is what I was talking about, the Arkansas Public Health Lab that Dr. Baker leads. This has the date there that you'll see highlighted where additional equipment was implemented May 25th. That is equipment that the Department of Health purchased for testing equipment, and that is what has enabled the individuals that work so hard at the laboratory to go up to, on one day, 1,300 cases, these days 700 cases that are being done within the Department of Health. That's the result of the new equipment that was purchased, and I just want to emphasize that. And then if you go on now, I'm to my 190. So this is June 1, back on Monday, we had 190 cases, and of the 190 cases, you'll see that 29 of those we were unable to contact, and then 17 are pending assignment for case investigation, and then you had 144 that were successfully contacted for investigation, and that breaks down to 37 contact tracing was not needed, 87 we had a successful contact tracing for them, and 20 are pending a contact. And so you see at the end there 222 contacts are identified from the 190 cases. And so if you add the 190 with the 222, that's 190 positive individuals with 222 people that they identified that they had potentially exposed them to COVID-19. That's the 222 contacts. You add those together and you can see that is, 412? 412 individuals, our lives are touched because of positive cases here. And that means that they have to isolate, they have to quarantine for 10 or 14 days. And then if you go to the next slide, you'll see a little bit more breakdown of these. These are linked versus unlinked status of the 190 community cases reported on June 1. 11 of them were identified as linked to a nursing home or a correctional facility. 78, the contact, they had contact with a known positive, so we could identify exactly where it came from. Six of them, well, zero, was traveled to advisory location. Two, they had contact with a case under investigation, and then 24 of them were member of a known or suspected cluster. It could have been some facility, it could have been some place of employment, or some other type of cluster that we've been able to identify. And the key number is that we've linked 60%, 60.5% of the cases as to where they're coming from. And then records without links where you really can't identify it, 75. Those are good numbers that we see, and I applaud them for their success in that contact tracing. And then this is a breakdown across the state as to where these 190 came from on Monday. In the dark red, it's 40 or more, and then the lighter red, 20 or 39 cases in that county, and then 10 to 19. And of course, if you get to the white, it's simply 1 to 4 cases. So here again, you can see Sevier County, DeQueen, Pulaski, Yale, of course, there's a poultry facility there, Polk County, and Benton and Washington County, where we've talked about before. And then the rest are in the lighter numbers, which indicate that they have not had that large number of cases. And then if you'll go on, and I'll ask, just to break it up a little bit, Dr. Smith, if you'll come and talk about these next two slides, which will be the characteristics.
These are the characteristics of the 190 from Monday. And you can see in terms of race, ethnicity, 52% Latino, 44% white, 11% African American, and then 24% other, and some of those may include Marshallese, although the 10% Native Hawaiian or Pacific Islander will be mostly Marshallese. In terms of age category, you can see that the largest percentage as a group is the 25 to 44 year old range. And we've got even 16% of those are under 18, and the small percent 65 and older. So as we've talked about, this is characteristic of this sort of second wave that we're seeing, again, mostly from the northwest part of the state, tend to be younger individuals and a relatively large proportion in the Latino community. Can we have the next slide as well? Again, the question we're always looking at is, you know, there's a temporal relationship. We opened up a month ago, and then we've got these cases. Is there any connection between these two? And we're not seeing it at this point. This is typical for a day that we've seen in this second wave. Of the 190, two had visited a barber shop within the previous 2 weeks. That doesn't mean that that's how they got their infection, but we're looking for potential connections. One at a daycare, one at a gym, three at a health or wellness, either a doctor's office, whatever, two at a hotel or motel. The largest connection is with the poultry business. That's 39 out of 190, so not the majority by any means, but that's the largest single exposure venue. And I think we may have one more slide. Is that the last one? Okay. Yes. Okay, here we go. Then we've got some other characteristics. We had eight in a nursing home, one nursing home worker. Those were, you saw on the linked versus unlinked slide. You had some a couple of correctional facility cases. One of them, you know, we didn't do contact tracing because unfortunately the individual had died. And then 19 had recovered. There's sometimes a delay between the onset of symptoms and the time that they're tested, and there's another delay between the time the specimen is collected and when we get the results. And so, and then of course it's been 5 days since then. So some of those 119, 10% of them, 19 of them have already recovered. I'll turn it back over to the governor then.
Thank you, Dr. Smith. And let me ask Dr. Dillahay to come, and she can refer back if she needs to, but just explain a little bit more in a professional way the contact tracing as to how it's done.
Thank you, Governor. Thank you, Dr. Smith. So what I would like to do is say a little bit about contact tracing and give some more details about how it's done. This is a very important public health strategy for stopping the chain of transmission. So when the Arkansas Department of Health receives a report of a positive COVID test, then we reach out to the patient, the new case, with one of our nurses. Our nurse gives a call, and they are working really hard right now because we have an increased number of cases. They call the patient, and they interview them over the phone. They ask them about when their symptoms began, because what we want is to determine the period of infectivity, when they could have transmitted the illness. So we learn about their first day of symptoms, and then we back up 2 days, because we know that it's possible to transmit COVID-19 virus a couple of days before people have symptoms. So it's asymptomatic spread or pre-symptomatic spread in that situation. Sometimes people develop very mild symptoms or no symptoms at all, and so then we take the onset of symptoms just simply to be the day the test was collected, and then we back up 2 days, and we consider that to be their period of infectivity. So we talk to the patient, we learn about who they are, who's in their household, who they might have had close contact with at home. We learn about their activities. Are they employed? Where do they work? Right now, school's not going on, but in the future, it may be a student. We would learn about where they go to school. And then we also learn about their activities. Did they go to a beauty parlor, for example? Or was there a social gathering, a birthday party, a funeral, or something where they would have had contact with people? We're interested in the people that they've had close contact with, and we define that as being within 6 feet of another person for greater than 15 minutes. Those would be their close contacts. We ask them to think of these people, make a list, and either the nurse will gather that information, or on occasion we will turn the patient's information over to a contact tracer who will gather that list from the patient, and then they will systematically go through and call each one of the contacts, inform them of the probable exposure, and then explain to them about what they need to do the quarantine. A case who is ill goes into what we call isolation. That is to prevent the spread. And usually that is for 10 days after their onset of symptoms. Assuming they do well, they're not in the hospital, and they haven't had fever for 3 days before they come off isolation. But for quarantine, we want people to remain away from other people where they would transmit the disease if they were to become ill. And that's for the whole incubation period of the virus, which is 14 days. We encourage anyone who is a contact to go ahead and get tested, because it is possible that they have already developed the illness and haven't had symptoms yet. However, if they do have symptoms, we want them tested also. So someone who tests negative and has no symptoms and as a contact, they still need to remain quarantined for 14 days because they still could develop illness after the test. But if they do have a positive test, then that tells us that they have illness, and then we can go on and do contact tracing for their contacts. And that's how we stop the chain of transmission. Those patients or the contacts, as well as the people who are cases, are monitored through our electronic SARA alert system to inquire how they're doing every day. And then if there's a problem, they have a nurse or someone they can contact about what to do next if they need to get tested or go to the hospital or so forth. So it's an involved process. We have a lot of people working on this. Right now we have about 200 staff, actually closer to 240 staff right now working on it. And then we have collaboration with the UAMS College of Public Health and other entities that are being trained in this process so that we can increase our capacity. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Dillahay. And let's put up one. I got a couple more things I told you. One more thing I told you we'd talk about today. Let's see what we got here. All right, so I wanted to look at our testing across Arkansas in terms of the region of our states. And this is probably the most critical one because you can take the total number of tests that we do, and you'll see in a slide in a moment that, you know, they're concentrated up in Northwest Arkansas because we have a lot more symptomatic people right now, and so they have a lot more tests up there, but they also have more population. And the same thing in Central Arkansas is you got much greater population, and so they're going to have more tests based on population. This gives you how many tests per 10,000 individuals. And so if you look in the Northwest, you'll see 351 tests per every 10,000 individuals. And then if you go down to the Southeast, you'll see 585.2 tests per 10,000 people. And the same thing over in the Southwest, 325. Central, 374 tests per 10,000 people. And the Northwest, 427 per 10,000 people. And so you can see largely that's balanced across the state. But obviously, the population centers is going to have an actual higher number, and that's what you'll see on the next slide, which is what the total test is across each of the areas, and 24% in the Northwest, and you see 8.8% in the Southeast, 9.8% in the Southeast, but again, per 10,000, it's comparable, actually a little bit higher in the Southeast. And the final slide just gives you one day, which is June 4th, which is today, and you can see the number of tests that were done in each region. 234 in the southeast, which is 6.1% of the total, versus 34.5% up in the northwest, which is 1,326 cases. Again, you have to look at the population base, and I think it tells us that we're really testing all across the state, in every region of the state, and it gives us a good sense as to where we are in terms of the spread of COVID. And before I turn it with questions, I'll just tell you, I went out to a wonderful demonstration by the Capitol today, and there were, Dr. Smith, I hate to tell you this, that there are probably more people than you would expect under our guidelines, but they were wearing masks, and they were serious about that, they were respectful of others, and I just applaud the young people that are taking that seriously. And if Arkansans ask me, well, what do we need to do to help you to beat COVID-19? And there's just one simple answer, and that is take it seriously every day and don't let down on your discipline and your awareness of this virus and the damage that it can done, that it can do. And beyond that, let's live life. Let's just live it carefully and manage the risk. With that, we're happy to take any questions.
Can we get a breakdown of the positives by county from, I guess, yesterday's results?
You want to give that now, or do you want to give that?
Yeah, I don't have a breakdown of counties for today's.
He can get that to you whenever it's available. Yep.
I was just wondering if there was a certain density in Northwest and if that was causing any kind of difficulty at the hospitals there.
Well, certainly there's more density in the Northwest. That's one of the reasons that there's more tests being done, which means that there's more cases being done in terms of hospital facilities. I've talked to the administrators of the hospitals there, and they have good capacity, and they have a good system also that supports that capacity, and they're doing not just their COVID treatments and care, but they're also continuing to do the elective procedures as well. So they're not slowing down on that. Yes, ma'am.
With these new cases that we've been seeing over the past several days, is our contact tracing team behind? Are they overwhelmed? And if so, by how much?
Great question. And I'm going to ask Dr. Dillahaye to address that. But it's something that we visit about because I want to make sure we have the most robust capability in terms of our contact tracing. Is that, Dr. Smith, did you want to refer to Dr. Dillahaye on that, or do you want to cover that?
I'll go ahead and address
okay.
I would say that our contact tracing team is handling it, but they are definitely stretched. We have plans to expand. Our most immediate plan is next week. We'll be training up to 100 volunteers, and these are volunteers from a number of different organizations that have stepped forward. Arkansas Foundation for Medical Care, Central Arkansas Library System, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Department of Human Services, the UALL School of Social Work, and the New York Institute of Technology, their medical school in Jonesboro. They are going to send volunteers to us to train, and they will be deployed in different areas to assist us with contact tracing. Also today, our request for qualifications has gone out, and we are looking to contract with an organization to help us scale up our contact tracing to add 350 contact tracers plus everything they need to be effective in doing their job of contact tracing. So we are hoping that within the next few weeks to a month or two, we will be able to more than double our capacity for contact tracing.
Do you know how many of the new cases still need to be investigated?
Well, you can get an idea from Monday's numbers. We've been able to reach most of those. It takes a few days, no matter how many you have, I don't have the numbers for today because they're still working on them as we speak.
but the plan is to investigate every case in order to identify the contacts, to isolate, quarantine those that are necessary. And I've told Dr. Smith that if he needs resources, we want to provide those, because we're building the infrastructure not just for now, but for the fall as well, and the contact tracing is a critical part of that.
Just for the kind of a similar line with the example you gave, just to put those numbers in context, do you feel like that's a good, those are good numbers, or do you want to see them get better? And the fact that said 17 cases were pending assignment, does that mean, is that an indication that there's not enough people?
And the question relates to, am I satisfied with the, we had 190 cases, and I think it was 222 contacts out of those. That is down from what was cited as the average earlier of 2.8 contacts per every case. And so that looks to me like it's down. And I do think that there's we need to beef up our personnel that can do contact tracing so that we can make sure that we can identify everyone that might have had an exposure that we need to make sure they're isolated.
Today, Mayor Scott initiated a dine-out policy initiative about having tables set up in parking lots and on sidewalks and in lawns of their establishments. Is that something you would encourage statewide to do, or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, what we want to do is to support the restaurant industry consistent with public health guidelines. And so I applaud the mayor for looking at ways that can be creative, that supports the ability of people to go out, dine out, and enjoy in a healthy environment. And you can see from these statistics that our contact tracing does not identify new cases with the fact that restaurants are in use, because they are taking those public health standards. And so I'm very pleased with the action he's taken. Not to expand outdoor seating, as long as it's, again, has the proper spacing requirements. And so, absolutely, we encourage that, but it's still consistent with the phase one guidelines of on capacity as well as on spacing. Can we go remotely and see if there's a question remotely?
Hi, Governor. This is Paige Forsey with 4029. Tyson is going back to attendance policy. Were you aware of that? And do you have any concerns that sick workers may go to work, ultimately perpetuating the spread of COVID-19?
Did you say global attendance policy?
No, Tyson's attendance policy. It's going back to its normal attendance policy.
Oh. Am I concerned about it? From my conversations with industry, that they're bringing their workers back, but they're doing it under the new model of spacing, of staggering schedules as needed. So they're very mindful of the public health requirements on that. And so bringing them back in and of itself does not concern me, as long as they're following those guidelines. So Dr. Smith, did you have anything to add there?
That was when they reinstate this attendance policy, those workers can be punished for missing shifts. So do you worry that that will incentivize people to go to work who may be sick and may be willing to chance it?
I would hope that the model for a company is that if a employee says, I am sick, or I've got a fever, or I might have symptoms of COVID-19, that obviously they should not come to work. That's the reason they screen them, and that they're paid for the time that they cannot be at work. It's sick leave or other types of COVID-19 leave. And that's the model that I see out there, and I'd be surprised if any company is not providing those accommodations. Dr. Smith, did you want to add?
Yes, again, a number of the businesses have taken a lot of measures to make their workplaces safer, but this is one where businesses, it's in their best interest to try and be as safe and minimize the risk of COVID-19. We have seen some clusters associated with workplaces that we've mentioned, and most of those have been poultry-related at this point, but any business has the potential, and that's why it's important that they put those measures in place.
Is there another question remotely?
Governor Hutchinson, this is Jamie White. Question for you. I know last night in Harrison, Arkansas, there was a Black Lives Matter protest that went pretty peacefully. There's another one scheduled for this afternoon. Do you have any concerns about protests here in the area, and are you planning to call in the National Guard to be nearby?
I want to make sure I understand the question. Is there a question about whether the National Guard needs to be called in for some of these protests across the state? Is that the question?
That's correct, and specifically near Harrison. That's correct, Governor.
And the answer is we work closely with local law enforcement. Those demonstrations have been peaceful. And there has been handled by local law enforcement to protect the protesters if there's any issues. The National Guard has not been called or activated for them. If there is a need, we'll take a look at it. We always look at civilian law enforcement first, such as a state police support. And then if there's need be, we will utilize other resources. But from everything I understand, these have been peaceful. Any issues have been handled by local law enforcement. We'll stay in touch with them if there's any need, but there's certainly not any plans to further deploy the National Guard. All right, is there any other questions? We got one here, then here.
You're
first.
The Baxter Bulletin reported a positive case at Calico Rock at the prison there. Can you tell us about that?
I don't have any specific information on that case, but we're working very closely with Department of Corrections. Whenever there's a case, we immediately go in and do testing, and that will help guide us whether we need to do further testing. So,
testing as a matter of course at all the prisons, or and that was detected, or if that person was sick.
We're working very closely with WellPath, and if they've have a positive test or symptomatic individuals, then that's a trigger. It's a pretty closed system, and so at this point we're not doing testing unless there's evidence of infection.
Smith, is there a particular age range or area where the hospitalizations are coming from?
In terms of age range where we're seeing hospitalizations, our highest proportion of hospitalizations are in the 65 and older. Even though they make up less than 15% of our cases now, they are over 70% of our hospitalizations. Over 70% of our deaths, and also the majority of our hospitalizations.
Yes.
Anything new in terms of the idea of a regional approach to reopening, or are you still?
We'll address that Monday. I think what we articulated today and the graph that we had on testing being spread across the state is very informative to us. That's a data point that we needed, so we'll address that again early next week. Is any final question remotely? If not, I think we're good for today. Thank you all very much.